And then the solo says, e mi mi yo, and then you go once again through. Okay, let's try it. Wa 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 we mi mi yo. Wa 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 we lagbara. Wa 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 e mi mi lo. Wa 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 we mi mi yo. Wa 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 we lagbara. Wow, wow, wow. The solo is usually said, does a lot of things. Emilio. And then everybody goes on singing the same way that you've been singing. Wow, 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 Emilio. Wow, 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 Elantara. Wow. I think we'll be singing it sometimes in the morning, so you will be ahead when we begin. Okay. Let's begin our session. We may roll the tape now. The unseen taping session. We want to greet you. Want to come here and introduce ourselves to you, because we have core teaching sessions that come on different days this week, and last week we had them following each other at the same time. This is my husband Muhongi Kanyoro, and my name is Musembe Kanyoro. We both come from Kenya, and we both work in Geneva with different organizations. In our sessions here, we are this week each one of us dealing with our area where our calling in terms of work is also reflected, because Muhongi will be doing sessions on issues of economics and assisting, empowering groups of needy poor people to become self-independent and find ways in which they become present in the decision-making in regards to their own lives, using credit as one of the sources and other empowering sessions. And so he will do a session tomorrow at 10:30. I will do and tomorrow at 10:30 and the Thursday at 10:30. I will do sessions, and this week I'll be doing sessions on African women theology. Last week I did sessions on gospel and culture, mission subject. And this week I will do two sessions on African women's theology. I think Muhongi will introduce himself more tomorrow. So I will introduce myself just with a couple of other things, and then we get started with this session. I have two specializations that I bring to this subject. My training is both in theology and linguistics. I studied in this country, even if you don't notice an American accent. Actually, I told the first group, the two of us thought everybody had an accent except ourselves. But we lived in this country for 6-7 years during the time that I did my graduate studies.
Where?
The University of Texas in Austin, in Austin, where I both did my master's and PhD. I also did my theological education here at the Divinity School in Harvard, and I'm doing some more studies at San Francisco Theological College now. I have, what I'm going to present to you comes a bit out of our writing as African women, and do get me, I'm using plural, because we do theology in Africa as women together in solidarity with one another, holding one another's hand, because we think that we are at a stage where we need to do that. And I'm bringing to you the theology that we do together, out of which we have published a number of books, at least right now, 10 that have come out of this group of women theologians that are doing theology together. The title that I have given today's talk is The Will to Arise. The Will to Arise is a title of a book which is published by Orbis here in this country. And it's a book which Mercy Oduyoye and myself, Mercy Oduyoye is a woman theologian from Ghana, and myself have edited by putting together a number of articles written by women from the whole continent. And I'll be bringing that to our session this afternoon. And the second title that I have chosen for the next subject will be a title of this book, which is a new book that we have just come out with, also by African Women, where I have also been key to bringing it out. And it's called Groaning in Faith. Today, the intention is just to give you some idea of how we are rising and writing and speaking for ourselves, so that we can share who we are as theological persons, as daughters of God from the continent of Africa with the rest of the world. Let's begin by just seeing a small clip of a video as which we will use as a springboard into what I have to say this afternoon. By the way, if I need to speak louder or if my accent is not so audible, just raise your hand. I don't get offended, actually. And I will speak loud. There's two of us, one is tall, one is short.
In the history of our people and in our lives. It is a movement of women hearing and naming God's acts and presence in the world, in our own languages, in words we can relate to our faith and experience as women.
My name is Selby. My mother only had me, so I did all the work on our land. Since I married, I live here. My mother was sick. She had no one else to work in the fields. She made up a song for me. The song I sing is like our life. There is no rest for the poor. Many women throughout the world are victims of poverty, illiteracy, and injustice. They live out their lives as property of their fathers, husbands and sons. They face chronic fatigue and malnourishment because they carry the double burden of work and family duties. Against this backdrop, women are often powerless to protect their basic human rights. Some are even forced to support their families through prostitution. Many of their communities are torn apart by war. Other women are scarred by a more personal form of violence. who will respond to their cries for help?
I need help. Yes, I can talk. I'm on my way.
Breaking the cycle of poverty, violence, and hopelessness that marks many women's lives is one of the major thrusts of the Ecumenical Decade for Churches in Solidarity with Women.
Thank you, Johnson.
Hi, Dee. Welcome to the refuge. I'm glad that you're here. We'll be safe here, okay?
In 1988, the World Council of Churches announced a decade for churches to be in solidarity with women. The decade was established to respond to the injustice that women suffer and to challenge the churches to accept their contributions.
I think there is a common denominator which unites all women around the world, be it east, west, north, and south. And this is the inferiority position in which women all over the world found themselves.
Why do you think a decade for churches in solidarity with women is needed?
I think both the Vancouver Assembly and the Central Committee, which took the decision to launch this decade, were clear enough. Women are understood as equally sharing with men in the image of God. Each has his or her origin from. Therefore, any act which denies the dignity of the human person and any act which discriminates against women and men on the basis of gender is a sin.
The Ecumenical Decade for Churches in Solidarity with Women is a call to open our eyes to the needs and gifts of women. It is an opportunity for all of us in the church to respond by enabling the women we know to stand tall and become all they are meant to be.
We bring an account in the scriptures of a woman the Bible says to us, who for 18 years was crippled with an infirmity. The Bible says that she was bent over for 18 solid years. The state of this woman. She could not achieve that which her intellect and her mind desired. She couldn't get to the heights that every other woman desired to get to. She was crippled. All she could see day in day was the floor. She couldn't stand up straight and tall. And the Bible says that this woman one day walked into the temple. And Jesus was there. I can imagine what was going through her mind. Fear gripped her. She could have chosen to pretend she didn't hear him. She could have chosen to pretend Jesus was talking to somebody else. Fear could have gripped her. How do I get up from where I am? Move through all these indignant men to the main court where Jesus was. And many of us are gripped by fear. Women of Zambia, hear me. Be freed from that fear. Let your capabilities be seen. Let us stand up and be a blessing to our nation. I believe it with all my heart that it is an asset that any nation, any people have, it's women. We are the center, hallelujah. We are the make or build. Be freed. God wants us to soar, but we can only soar in the heights when our spirit man is released and freed from bondage. That's when God will hear us. Like this woman who recognized that the one who has called me is greater than the rulers and of this synagogue. We've also got to realize that God himself is greater than anything else. That's why I cry out to the church to stand together with the women. I cry out to the church to get a hold of God
example of what we are doing. And from here, then I explain what is happening. I wear a t-shirt from Beijing, from the Forum of Women in Hoiaro Center in Beijing, where 40,000 women met. And maybe some of you are here or you know people who are there. I wear it to say to you that, first of all, we realize when we do theology in Africa or any other issue that we are dealing with, be it political, social, that seeks for freedom, self-expression for women, that we are doing it in the context of other women globally. And the issues that we are dealing with are no different from the issues that other women are dealing with, except that ours are grounded within our own social context in which we are set. The peculiarity is the way that those issues happen to us, be it an issue of violence or poverty or something else. So this is the first affirmation we make, that we are doing our theology and our particular theologies of African women express aspects of global and African women's Christian theologies. The other issue is to bring in the aspect of theology. If you listen to the Zambian woman who was preaching, probably what she said is no different from what any other woman would say anywhere they are. The issue of women and fear to be who they are because of the socialization that has happened within societies in which we live. Sometimes when I'm speaking in particular places and I have an audience, the audience sometimes has the impression that our situation is worse off, and it must be worse off because we do things such as carry the water on our heads, go to the river and carry the water on our heads, or carry firewood on our heads, or not, or wear our kanga. This is a kanga. I just wore it in this class right now, so I would feel more African. or the way we wear our clothes, or I have heard it also said of Indian women that the sari, for example, might be what is oppressing the women in India. These things are not what we focus when we do theology, because we do not think that dress as such is oppressive to someone. Actually, we sometimes really enjoy the kind of clothes that we wear, because we think that they look good anytime, anytime, any place, and one probably doesn't have to worry to go and change, etc. So in one story that I wrote, I talked of one woman who was wearing a clean old dress, and truly it was clean, you would see, but very, very old, because she doesn't have so many, but she is the one that made the theology that I was speaking about. In 1988, the World Council of Churches launched the Ecumenical Decade of Churches in solidarity with women. How many of you are aware of this? Yes, quite a number. Others are not. But what a bishop from Nigeria was in a meeting, one of the meetings of the World Council of Churches, where in the Central Committee, where some people said that the meeting in 1975, which happened in Nairobi, the end of the United Nations Ecumenical, the United Nations Decade for Women, did not even have much effect in the churches, because the churches did not take that decade as their own decade, but they saw it as the United Nations decade. So that bishop, not really knowing what he was saying, from Nigeria, Methodist bishop, said, why can't we have a churches decade in solidarity with women? And the people in the Central Committee of the World Council of Churches picked up this, and they launched the Ecumenical Decade of Churches in Solidarity with Women, during which time they said between 1988 and 1998, churches should listen to what women globally are saying and seek to empower the women, to give space to the women's theology, education, removing women from poverty, checking the whole question of violence in the homes and public violence, sexual harassment, and all these things that women's movements had brought up. And by 1998, the churches should become accountable to saying what it is that they have been doing in their own areas. The World Council of Churches is now doing some returns by visiting the churches and finding out what churches have done. A preliminary response to that is that women have become very much in solidarity with one another and have kept the decade going, but did not very much go into where it was supposed to go, go into every part of the church. We in Africa, the women who have studied theology in Africa, had some thought. One of the women had for a long time thought of a way to bring us together so that we could examine the way that we do theology, how we learn theology in schools, and how do we get back this theology to our own communities. Because it is one thing to learn theology and to go and teach at a seminary or at a university, which many of us do. But it's another thing to make a change in the community from which you come. The concern then was, is the theology that we learn in the seminaries, in universities, does it make a change in our societies, or do we remain as individuals who have become changed, we benefit from it, but we give nothing directly to the majority of the communities from which we come? Because the institutions at which we teach are not representatives of the majority of the communities from which we come in Africa. I would say probably 70% of the people will never know the classroom situation on our continent. So what happens to the education we get if we leave out the 70%? And for us women, the second question we have to ask, what happens if the theology that we do does not get to the women in the rural areas, which are the ones that have nurtured our being? They have nurtured our parents, they have nurtured us. It's only the generation after us that can claim, if they live in the city, that they were born in the city. But most of us were born in the rural areas, and we did leave the rural areas to the city because of education or work. So what is happening there? Have we just forgotten? Forward ever and backward never, is this really what we can contribute to? We decided that that was not a good way of doing theology. If we have to do theology at all, it is not how many faith statements that we can make, it is not so much how many publications of books we can put out, and how many papers we can present in conferences internationally, which many of us who are trained theologically have a chance to do. But what is more important is how we can be able to get back that freeing gospel truth to the communities from which we come. And so we decided that we needed to change. We formed an association in 1989 in Ghana, first beginning with 66 women, Catholics and Protestants alike. We called it the Circle of Concerned African Women Theologians. And we said that what we needed to do was to get back to our roots in the rural areas and speak with our grandmothers, our aunts, our mothers, our stepmothers because we come from polygamous situations, many of us, aunts and great-great-grandmothers, and really be at peace with ourselves within that context. Secondly, we need to be able to hear how they have lived out their faith, those that are Christians. What is it that keeps them going within the context in which they are? So we can learn from them. And if we have to write, we should be able to tell their story, because God has given us this gift of education, not to keep for ourselves, but to be able to share it. That the world will only know what is happening in my village if I tell it, because I have the chance to tell it in writing and in travel. So we wanted to go back to our roots in the villages and work together with our communities in the villages. We decided that we would collect some of the data from the issues that are pertinent within the villages and then write about them together in solidarity. Now, I'm trying to bring in about the writing in solidarity because we realized, many of us, that when we gathered together, we gathered women who had been in seminaries and had their diploma education or their first degree, but we also had women who had graduate studies and were in academics and were publishing books in the countries where they come from, be it South Africa, Kenya, Uganda, Nigeria, etc. And those that had never published even an article to the newspaper. Now, if we simply said, let us write, then some people have advantage over the others, and we are not helping to share that knowledge among ourselves. So we said that what we would do is we would identify the issues that we feel are important coming out of our communities. Then we would write about those issues together by helping each other to write. And the way we would help each other to write is that we would organize writing seminars where we come together in a sort of a conference place after we have researched and written about something, and we read and critique each other to the point to which we are able to help those who cannot write to bring their what they want to say to a point to which it can write without removing their identity from it, so that they still will have that writing under their name. And that when we use data from our communities, that we would also name the communities from which we have received the data. So I'm writing about my grandmother, and I name her and put her name in the story that I'm writing. So that when you read it, you don't only discover Msimbi, but you also discover I am named Msimbi after my grandmother, who helped me to tell the story that I was about, that I have told about in a particular book. So that was one step that we took, and we committed ourselves to do that for each other. We say that where there are any three or four or two circle members, that group is big enough to get something going. And they should not wait until we are many. And so we formed different small circles. And it is that that has made it possible that we are producing writings and publishing now even internationally, because people could have the freedom to research and write together. When we meet together, which we do frequently first in subgroups, either as national circle, the Kenya circle, the Zambia circle, the Uganda circle, the Nigeria circle, the South Africa circle, and the, even when in a big country like South Africa, you have Cape Town circle and Johannesburg circle, or in Kenya, you have the Nairobi circle and the Western Kenya circle, for example. When they come together and meet, we agree together that if we are able to prop up a writing to a point where it is good enough to be published internationally, we will put it in a book that will circulate internationally. In some articles, we just know we need to prepare them for our newspapers back at home, either in the churches or in the country newspapers. And this is good enough because it helps any of the growing, budding writers to see themselves in print at step by step. And so, process-wise, this is the process that we are doing to do the theology that we are doing, assisting one another. As I said, internationally, now we have four international books. Regionally, as a continent, we have 10 books that we have produced between 1988 and now. Presently, I'm the coordinator for this circle, and we share the leadership of the circle. I just took over from someone else now, but somebody else has been a coordinator, and we have people from each of the zones represented in the coordination. We also wanted to avoid the dependency from outside of having thinking that we need money to do something. So we have decided that those among us that have got a better earning contribute a little bit more of the money that we need for the publications, and those that have less contribute as much as they can give. And the only time that we have been able to raise some money internationally has been when we meet as a region to pay for the transportation of people from different countries, because many of our sisters on the continent cannot afford to pay for a ticket to come to point X where we will be able to make a meeting. What then is the contents of what we do? The process was important. I needed to put this process down because it's very important for us to do this theology, and we keep saying we do it in solidarity. What then do we do in our studies? Today I want to keep our talk to some of the more traditional ways of theologizing that we have done. And in my second lecture, I'm going to pick up the pertinent issues that bother us and what we have said about them. So in the second lecture, I will talk about polygamy, female circumcision, I will talk about violence in the families and how we are dealing with that. And today I'm going to stay a little bit in the church. One of the subjects that has been important to us has been to listen to the women's stories of how we interpret the Bible and what the particular messages of the Bible mean to us. So, what we did, as we went back into our communities, as women who have studied theology, We wanted to hear how the stories that we read, and we have had other women from other parts of the world, theologize about, how do our communities read them? Here was an example for those of you who had the story of one of us, a member of our association from Zambia. The story of the woman who was ill for 18 years. When we read those stories, a story such as that, or the story of the woman with the blood who came to Jesus, how are these stories read within our context of women who have never studied theology or taken a book of another woman theologian and read it? How are they read? We went back with these stories and started to do Bible studies in our communities, a number of us doing Bible studies in our communities. And actually what we found out is that despite the fact that women in our own rural communities do not have any schooling, in terms of the feeling and the liberating power that they get from these stories, they speak quite a lot to them. What usually happens, if I make a generalization, women in our rural areas read a story such as that, and they place themselves right in the center of the story first. I am the woman that has been ill for 18 years. I am the woman that has a flow of the blood. I am the woman that is bringing my daughter, who is ill, to Jesus to be healed. I am the mother of the person who is lowered down, the blind, the person who is lowered down on a pallet, on a mat. A mat is quite common in many parts of Africa. It's true that hospitals are very fond. When somebody is ill, we carry that person on a mat, something very close to what would have been used in ancient Middle East, which is very much like a pallet. I am the mother of that woman. This is usually the woman place themselves at that center, and they take the character of that particular person. The reason why this becomes very easy for people in our communities is that those illnesses that are talked about in the Bible are very prevalent. Those conditions of poverty, those conditions of widowhood, those conditions of having so little that a woman gives her little coin, her last coin, as the offering, are realities that are not strange to our people. They are not stories of the Bible for many of our communities. They are our stories. So we found that the identification with the stories comes right quickly. Now, the second step that usually happens after people have identified with these particular stories, they have become the patient looking after Jesus, is to look for Jesus with the same kind of regard. Is Jesus gonna heal my child when I bring my child for either prayer meeting, to the hospital, when I give my child aspirin, or a chloroquine or something for malaria, is Jesus going to heal the person? The faith of the women in our communities is, yes, Jesus is going to heal the person. If you find, you know, the evangelistic groups which come into places for prayer, to give prayers for healing, they appeal very much to our communities. And if people do not get healed, I worked with groups, for example, in Ethiopia, there's some kind of disappointment that comes, because the belief system is really there. It's really there because it's been read in the Bible and the identification has been there. So when we are doing theology in our own, with our Bible studies in our own villages, we try to identify that and then carry on the discussion a little bit longer so that there is a grinding on a total story. There is a more affirmation of, yes, I am the woman who will be healed and Jesus will heal me, but to try to find out what happens if the person goes to the hospital and dies. what happens if the person goes to the hospital and dies. So working with communities to try to realize that when the person goes to the hospital and dies, it's not because your faith was so small, is one of the big tasks that lies ahead of us. It's not because their Christian belief has not been strong enough, but to try to work with communities to see that they are still affirmed by Christ, even when we still go through these disappointments that we have, which are quite many in our own societies. Now we're beginning to write about Christology, in our, how do African women in the rural areas identify, who's Christ to us? And the most common, when we work with our rural communities, the most commonly named by our groups is Jesus Christ is the healer. Jesus Christ is the healer. Almost comes out as one of the most fronted, the one put right ahead of anything. Jesus Christ is the healer. Jesus Christ is the comforter. Comforter because when we do not get the healing, when we have hoped to go through a situation of not having famine because we have planted, we have dug, like you saw the woman. Did you see the woman in the video? With a very tiny instrument. A very tiny instrument, and stayed the whole day with the baby, and then the drought comes and you don't have the harvest that you want. That is the time when Jesus Christ becomes the comforter, because you have done everything possible. You have believed, you have worked, but still you did not harvest. Thank you. I was wondering what was making me uncomfortable. I think that's it.
Does anyone know how to turn this off?
Oh, thank you.
In our Christological identification, that is another theme that we are finding uniformly, because what we do when we come back is to reshare how are we discovering these themes coming out of our own community. Another theme that seems to come out, quite a Christological theme that is quite important for many African women in the rural areas, is Jesus Christ is our hope. Our hope in the sense that even when we don't know what is going to happen, either to our harvest, to our children, to get school fees tomorrow, that we hope that we won't have the war coming our way, we hope that things will go on as we wish them to happen, then the Christian women will always identify that. Well, you will hear people say in our own local languages, the only hope is to look to Jesus. The only hope is to look to Jesus. And we get back together with our communities in the village and build up this theme of hope more. Because you can see, as Paul says, hope is that for which we long for, what we have not received. So we build it with strength and using more of the scriptures from other places, so that the picture of the hope is grounded not only on what is happening, but is firmly grounded within the scriptures as well. That's another strong Christological naming that we hear from African women. I probably need to say that the certain terminologies such as Christology are quite foreign to us. And when we are doing theology in the rural areas, we probably wouldn't use any of this, but it's only when we get back to ourselves in the circle of concerned women theologians that we begin to analyze and rename this in terminologies that we think we will be able to communicate to the rest of the world globally, so that we can be able to say what it is that is happening on our own communities. Another important aspect that seems to be, which we are beginning now to make also some generalizations, is there's a very strong, the culture actually bears quite a lot on what we have to say in our theologizing, in our way of belief, and in our way of interpretation of the scriptures. Africa is a large continent, and our cultures are not even uniform. Even between me and my husband, just the two of us, who don't come from the same community, not only are our languages different, such that we don't even understand each other's languages, but even our cultures are different. So Africa is a vast continent with many different cultures. When people speak about our continent as just one drop in the ocean, you do us a great disservice. Because unless you affirm the vastness and the differences, when certain conflicts arise, you are not able to place them within the context in which has created those conflicts. Be it a Rwanda case, be it in my country right now, where there's some political unrest. Some of it is based on culture, some of it is based on politics, etc., etc. So the cultural framework becomes very important, but also very different. This is where we find, when we go back to the way that people read the scripture, the elements of culture around them influences how they understand those particular scriptures. For example, I will use one example. I was reading the book of Ruth with a group of women in the western part of Kenya. In this particular part of the country, polygamy is present in the place, in this particular part of the, as one of the cultural practices. In this particular part of the country, young girls may be married to older men. If a young girl gets pregnant while she's still young and she's not married, the parents might make deals so that the young girl is married to a man who has been widowed, who is older than her. Okay? Let me use those two examples. When we came to the book of Ruth and we were dealing with Boaz, the people, the women in the village told me, we think Boaz was an older man and Ruth was a younger girl, and they found that it is in the Bible and Ruth married Boaz. They saw it almost as affirming part of the cultural practices. Now, where did they get the idea that Boaz was old and Ruth was young? Boaz talks to Ruth in that story and he says, my daughter, don't you listen to the stories of the younger men, etc. And uses that term, my daughter, of naming Ruth. But then Boaz, at the same time, marries Ruth. You remember? Mm-hmm. In the story. So this is, I have read a number of books written by women, by theologians, feminist theologians, but they never name that aspect that Boaz was an older man and Ruth was a much younger girl. And so there was a big debate there. Is this right that Boaz married Ruth, since the church and other people have been teaching for a long time discouraging the child marriages to older people? So they were asking, hey, what's happening here in the scriptures? It's there. Look at Boaz. And it is acclaimed, and not only is it acclaimed, Ruth continues with this blessing that she becomes one of the genealogy of Jesus Christ. What is happening? Is this a good thing? So they made me discover that and really follow it a bit. They also said, they looked at Boaz, looked at his age, looked at the people who were working for him in the farm. They thought about, around their village, who in this village would have a lot of people employed to work in their farm. Who in this village would people have to go to their place and seek to reap behind their farm? It has to be a rich man. Okay, so they identified Boaz as a rich man, a very rich man. A number of rich men in that particular context are also polygamous men. And so they asked, do you think Boaz was really unmarried? Did he have another wife that the Bible doesn't talk about? They asked me those kind of questions, which means they were able to pick up what is within their culture, what is happening, and be able to work out and ask questions, genuine questions. And their second question was, well, if Boaz was married at all, and here is Ruth, who marries as a young person. Of course, we hear a bit more about Ruth, and the story goes on. How come that God would let Ruth benefit from being in the genealogy after coming from a polygamous marriage? And because they are dealing with a situation where the church has been discussing with polygamy. Now, we will go into detail in the next lesson of how African women theologians have dealt with. Now, I'm not telling you how the theologians have dealt with it, but simply the issues coming out of our own groups as they read the Bible and discover themselves and the issues that are close to them, cultural issues that are close to them. Another story that I would like to use as an example The story of Genesis, we're doing the Bible studies on this, on Genesis this week. And I'm telling you, I have stayed with this book, with African women, for quite a long time. And I myself have published a few things on this from our own context on the African women. The story of Genesis is of much interest to our groups back at home, not only women, but men as well. Not the creation stuff, we don't read that. But it is the relationship stuff, the relationships between people. Between people, and especially the relationships between women in the book of Genesis. Such that when you are in any of our rural situation, and this probably you might find more uniformity than you find in some of the other issues, people will pick up the relationship between Sarah and Hagar and really discuss it to the depth to which feminist theologians in the West will never be able to understand it. Be able to lift up the things which bring out the positive aspects of Hagar, the things that could be negative in Sarah, where Sarah might be exploiting jealousy as a human nature from her. They point out these things quite a lot, and they come up to discuss how come in the church, in our bringing, they are able to ask questions: is really, is it right that we only see Sarah as the positive wife of the promise of, and not Hagar? And many of them will say, but my mother is a second wife. I am a second wife. So was Hagar. And they don't really like one of the things that feminist theologians from the West have often done is when they put up the two stories, is either they side with one or the other. Either they pick up the positive things about Hagar, or the negative things about Hagar, or the positive things about Sarah. When we are in our communities, what we have found, as we have analyzed and listened to each other, from South Africa to the north part, south of Egypt, we only have the Egyptians come with us for the first time last year. We have never had the Egyptian women with us. We found out that we could be able to share the same stories, that people are never able to say Hagar or Sarah is the person that should find the favor before God. They see each one of them as having a favor before God, and their own characters bound by what it is that the culture has prescribed for them to do. This is done very well with our rural women. And they are able to say, oh, but Sarah has to say this, because then they explain, using the culture from which she has said. But Hagar has to do this. She has to answer Sarah that way. Because imagine if Abraham had brought sugar and only brought it to Sarah's house and did not bring to Hagar's house. These kind of things, they name from what is happening in the culture. And they identify and do an exegesis. They have led us to what we are calling a new, which we now are doing quite a lot, which we are calling it cultural hermeneutics. And many of us are saying, from the perspective of African women, that we want this to be a field of theology in the same way as other areas of theology that have been there, so that theologians can put cultural hermeneutics as a part of a line of study, because we have found it very important in our own way, in our own communities, in the reading of the Bible that has happened. We have also done some work on ecclesiology. I should stop at 15 past. I have 5 minutes. We have also done some work on how women who are in the churches, by compiling what and trying to make some conclusion on what are we saying in terms of the church, ecclesiology. And I don't think I have time to tell you, but we are already making some conclusions there on this particular subject. And then presently, the research that we are involved on is to try and look at some questions in regard to how women in our communities name God from reading the Bible, but also we want to see how much is the naming of God influenced also by our own indigenous original belief systems of God, and how much is it is just Christian. Because we are theologizing from the platform of Christianity, But we are also theologizing, influenced by all the other religious pluralism that is existent in our own continent. This is not only African traditional religions, but it is also Christianity in many forms, the Pentecostal, the independent churches. It's also, we are surrounded also by Islam in our continent. And if you're doing theology with a woman in Kano, which is northern part of Nigeria, where Islam is dominant, you will find that there are certain aspects, even in the reading of the Bible, that come also from Islam. What we have done here is incorporate in this association that we have also Muslim women who are at seminary, who are at, not seminaries, at the universities, in the departments of religions, so they can help us to see in the depth those things that are coming out of Islam. Our time is up, but what I would like to conclude by saying is that we feel responsible to the rest of the global community, that many of us have had Western education, we have read books that have been written from the West, and we feel that we need to give back. We need to give back, not as loan, not by reading the books that we read and then quoting them again and rebuilding them, but rather by doing original research. So we encourage ourselves not to do our theology by building it a lot on how many quotes we quote from outside, but rather on developing a system of our own where we are able to use the original research and only use the others as secondary references that help us to name when we write for the international field. But when we write back, when we go back for our communities, we don't use this terminology. Rather, we use straight the Bible, reading the Bible together with the people, and then listening to what they have to say, giving a feedback in as far as we can give a feedback, and together addressing those issues that are most relevant to the context of Africa. And we see that we don't call this feminist theology, because even if we call it, the word wouldn't even come out the way it is, with all the negative connotations that has developed around that term when we speak in English. But we just say women speaking about God. I have in the library some of the books that I have worked on, or we have worked on as a group, are available in the bookshop. I didn't make an order beforehand, but if you would like to read some of this, the book that I would recommend to you that covers much of what I say today is The Will to Arise. The title of the book is The Will to Arise, African Women in Culture and Tradition. It is published by Obis, and it is edited by Oduyoye. Can I write it on? Mm-hmm. Obis, New York. Obis is here. And it is 1992. That's the book I would recommend to you for a first reading, if you are interested to get to know us. Thank you. Are there any quick questions?
Can you quickly say some of the names of God that the African women are using?
The names?
Yeah. What kind of names for God they have?
For God?
The images of God.
The images of God. You mentioned that they are coming with new images.
Oh, I said that this is the new area that we're beginning to work on.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I have something, a little chapter here that I'm writing out, and I will try to use it for the introduction next.
Can you share some of those names or images, are just quickly, or
no? I think we won't have the time for
okay.
It. Yes.
What are some competing forces that compete with the work you are doing?
One of the areas has been also to the challenges that we pose to our own African male theologians. because one of the areas we challenge quite strongly is look at culture and how culture, women are affected by the culture. Our African male theologians had posited the framework for doing theology in Africa as enculturation, because they were reacting from the colonization that just dumped everything African into the West basket in order to introduce Christianity. And enculturation did not look at how actually culture can be both liberating and also binding, enslaving. Now we challenge that, and that's one of the big challenges that we have. The next challenge that I think another competing and challenging that we have is that we find that we can go with feminist theology to a certain extent, but since feminist theologians or womanist theologians are not in a context such as we come from, some of the we don't go all the way. So we have a basic aims, but we part ways at some distance, simply because our experience is different and our environments shape us differently. Those two, I would say, are much more the ones that we have been in connection with, in partnership with.
How has your mother and your village reacted to you coming back and doing this? Have they been happy about it?
I am a village child myself.
Uh-huh.
I grew up in that particular village. I have been involved in the literally everything in that village, building of a church, building of a community. So my village doesn't even see me as, they don't even know I have a PhD. It doesn't make a difference to them. That is, they see me as a child whom they have been wiping their nose. And when I'm back into the village, they don't see me like you went away and you have come back, now you're bringing. They just see me as one of every other person. And I'm able to talk with them and they talk back with them. One of the good things with them, people who do not have a lot of education, Western education, is that the class system doesn't build up. I can create class system for them, but they don't create class system for me. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I have it. I can distinguish myself and say, hey, I've been to America, but big deal. Yeah. So it's not like a homecoming, it's just like being part of the people. And if you make yourself that way, people see you that way. If you make yourself different and go in and completely live your life by yourself or go in and refuse to be like what everybody is, then you stand out by yourself and you may find yourself not really making any progress in as far as being part of the community is concerned.
I really, if this is a comment, but the way you are doing is really fascinating, and also I envy you because you can live from the Old Testament. That's very similar to your experience in Africa there, you know, tribal cultures there. Plus you can go to the New Testament that shows new, you know, the Gospels right there can come in, so you can combine those, you know, back and forth, and that really weaves things, just come to together. I think that's really envious, in a way, maybe very difficult, but very envious thing you can put them together.
Come do it with us sometime. Yeah. I want to thank you for coming and invite you to come again on Thursday, so that we do the next part of it, where I will go into some details of actual issues that face us. And if you can come tomorrow at 10:30, you will hear another aspect of some of the life of working in communities of the churches, which will be given by my husband. Thank you very much.